Blog Talk Radio.
From the far reaches of the known universe, we are proud to present Brother Harold Muhammad, soldier, scientist, scholar. Blog Talk Radio's finest, not so mad science, on Black Hole Radio.
Assalamu alaikum, and welcome to tonight's edition of Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Once again, coming to you live from the city of Detroit. Just because Berry Gordy took Motown to L.A. does not mean Detroit has lost its soul. We have a very special show tonight. I'd like to welcome back my engineer. Boy, I love her so. She'll be here to help the brother out to be successful. To that end, I'm going to ask my engineer to play a nice piece of music as I get my mind together so I can share some more scientific news with you this evening. Let's see what surprise she has in store. Yes, indeed. Welcome back. Welcome back. A change is definitely going to come. What is that change? Just recently, has come to my attention that another species of what I call the great earthwalkers is on the verge of extinction. The white rhino. What is interesting about this is we have people in the world who do not believe that man has an impact on the environment. There are people in the world who do not believe that the environment does respond to the impact that other life has on it. So let's take a look at the white rhino. The world's last male northern white rhino has died. He went by the name of Sudan. In an article in the Washington Post by Max Barak, he said, unable to stand and suffering from a string of infections in his advanced age, the world's last male northern white rhino was euthanized this past Monday by a veterinary team in Kenya that had fought for years to save him and his dwindling species. Only two northern male white rhinos are left. The daughter, Najin, and the granddaughter, Fatu, leaving in vitro fertilization from preserved sperm cells as the last tool against the complete annihilation. I'm not going to say extinction. The complete and total annihilation of the northern white rhino from the face of the earth. Sudan, as the rhino was named, was 45 years of age when he died. Had unsuccessfully tried to mate with females from a related subspecies of rhino found in southern Africa. The second to last male, Suni, died in 2014, quite possibly from what the doctors say from a heart attack. Both Sudan and Suni were likely too old to be fertile by the time they were brought to the Old Pajeta Conservancy in Kenya from a zoo in the Czech Republic in 2009. The question needs to be asked, dear friends, what impact did zoo life have on these natural creatures? Think about that. What happens to an animal of any species, man considered, when you leave them caged in an unnatural environment, no matter how close to the normal environment you make it? What is the effect? According to the doctors at the Pajeta Conservancy, they say we at Old Pajeta are saddened by Sudan's death. He was an amazing rhino, a great ambassador for his species, and will be remembered for the work he did to raise awareness globally for the plight facing not only rhinos, but also the many thousands of other species facing extinction as a result of unsustainable human activity. I'm going to repeat that again. many thousands of other species are facing extinction, quote, as a result of unsustainable human activity, end quote. This was said in a statement from the Old Pagetta Conservancy CEO, Richard Zigney. He also stated, one day, his demise will hopefully be seen as a seminal moment for conservationists worldwide. Will the extinction of another species of the great animals that walk the earth be a seminal moment for those who do not even recognize that man has an immediate impact on environment? Sudan's death comes as other rhino populations around the world also teeter on the brink of extinction, largely due to poaching. Now, some would argue that, well, it's the people in Africa who are poaching the rhino. Yes, that's true. However, when you live in an impoverished environment due to the misappropriations of funds and greed by those who are in positions of authority and power, not in Africa, but around the west of the urinized, I'm not stuttering, urinized, E-U-R-A-N-I-Z-E-D, urinized world, who create the market for rhino horns, which is highly prized in Chinese traditional medicines, as decorative components of daggers carried by many men in the Yemeni. But the hidden hand of the largest market for poached rhino horn is in Europe. Think about that. Around 30,000 rhinos from 5 species remain worldwide. 2 species in Indonesia, the Sumatran and the Javan rhinos, have around or maybe less than 100 individuals. A recent drop in the price of rhino horn did not come soon enough to save the northern white rhino from near certain extinction. A 2016 study published in Swara magazine found that wholesale rhino horn prices have decreased in both China and Vietnam, $65,000 per kilogram. In 2012 and through 2013 to $30,000 to $35,000 per kilogram in 2015. Still a huge chunk of money for a kilogram of rhino horn. Al Jazeera News Agency found that the price in China declined even further during 2016 to fewer than $29,000 per kilogram. Still, South Africa, home of the biggest populations of rhinos in the world, has lost about $1,000 per year to poaching since 2013, according to WildAid. Sudan was born in 1972, is what is now South Sudan, at a time when there were still around 1,000 northern white rhinos roaming wild. but their habitat was then, as it remains today, one riven and ravaged by human conflict, spurred from outside southern Sudan. A colleague of the writer of this particular article, Kevin Cease, wrote in a profile of Sudan in 2015, and I'm quoting him, "They were concentrated," meaning the rhinos, "in countries plagued by war, Sudan, Congo, the Central African Republic. When fighting broke out, the rhinos were also victims, killed for their meat or their horns, or sometimes exchanged for money or arms. But Sudan was saved from the grisly state of the other northern white rhinos by representatives from the Dvor Kravlov Zoo in the Czech Republic." Some say saved. I beg to differ. At that time, when Sudan was just 3 years old, the extinction of his species did not seem imminent. Conservationists believe that interventions in which more northern whites were extracted from conflict-prone environments would stem their decline. Instead, both conflict and poaching surged during the next few decades, and northern white rhinos paid the price. By 2003, there were thought to be only 20 left in the wild, all in Congo's Gombra National Park. The Congolese government blocked plans to take any of them out of the country, and within a few years, all of them had been killed. Sudan, the rhino, the northern white rhino, spent the last years of his life under 24-hour protection from armed guards. His horns had been chopped off to deter poachers, though it had begun to grow back. Which is the peculiarity of poaching. If, in fact, rhino horn is such an exclusively and a desired product, why kill the animal to get the horn when it is easily, far easier to farm the animal as you would any other livestock, cut the horn off, let it grow back. And at the cost of what it is to get the horn, one would think that 65, let's say on the low end now, the $29,000 per kilogram for the horn, you would not need to do much to allow time for the horn to grow back. Which means the greater the herd, the more horns. Does it make sense to kill the animal for the horn? Interesting. In any case, the effort to save the northern white rhino seems to have come too late for a real turnaround. Al Pajeda Conservancy estimates that the cost of in vitro fertilization, from development of the method to trials, implementation, and the creation of a viable breeding herd of northern whites, could be as much as $9 million. In a press release, the Conservancy said it is attempting an unprecedented intervention, and I quote, to try and conduct the first ever procedure to safely remove egg cells from remaining females, fertilize these with semen previously collected from the northern white males, and insert the resulting embryos into female southern white rhinos acting as surrogates. Sudan was the last northern white rhino that was born in the wild. His death is a cruel symbol. Let me repeat that. His death is a cruel symbol of human disregard. Human disregard for nature, and it saddened everyone who knew him, according to Jan Stetsigel, the director of international products at Dvorakhovlov Zoo. But we should not give up. We must take advantage of the unique situations in which cellular technologies are utilized for conservation of critically endangered species. It may sound unbelievable, but thanks to the newly developed techniques, even Sudan could still have an offspring. What is the impact of man, made man, on the world? Has made man proven to be a cancer that needs to be eradicated and irradiated out of existence in order for nature to recover from the made man's impact? This is Not So Mad Science, and I'm your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. There's a way out. Can science save the northern white rhino subspecies? Ilana Glowacz reported in Newsweek magazine on March 20th at 3:34 p.m. today, she wrote the following. The northern white rhinoceros, she says, has a long road back from the brink of extinction. But not all hope is lost for this subspecies of rhino. There are methods scientists could potentially use to save the mammal. In the Kenyan-based Old Pajeta Conservancy that died on Monday, Sudan, the veterinarians there had to euthanize him because he was suffering a great deal from issues with his bones and muscles and his skin. All of these things were related to his old age. White rhinos, she says, can be divided into two subspecies, the northern white and the southern white. Excuse me. Sudan's death came a few weeks after reports that his health was deteriorating And about 2.5 years after the last northern white rhino death, it was in 2015 that the 41-year-old female Nola died from a bacterial infection. She, too, had been living by herself at the San Diego Zoo Safari Park in San Diego, California. Circumstances, I say, are alarming for the northern white rhino. With now only 2 members still standing, but Sudan may help conservationists and his subspecies from beyond the grave. Al Pajeda officials collected his genetic material for future attempts at reproduction of northern white rhinos through advanced cellular technology. Najin, the daughter of Sudan, and Fatu, the granddaughter of Sudan, the 2 surviving females, are not able to conceive naturally. But that's where technology, good technology, useful technology, comes in. The charity Helping Rhinos notes that there has been research into creating a calf using in vitro fertilization. If that fails, and Najin and Fatu die without bringing new rhino life, there are other last-ditch efforts scientists have used to revive a species, including a special breeding strategy that attempts to recreate lost animals. For example, on Ecuador's Galapagos Islands, for example, scientists are trying to make a species of tortoise de-extinct by selectively breeding close relatives such as their genes, such that their genes veer toward those of the disappeared population. Is it possible? Because the experts found the genetic materials of the extinct Florina tortoise in the members of another group. As a result of previous interbreeding, by strategically matching up the mixed ancestry tortoises, the team hopes to move future generations closer and closer to a purer version of the Florina tortoise, which is extinct. If, and I say if, the right genetic material is available, scientists might have a chance to follow a similar protocol for the northern white rhinoceros, if in fact the 2 northern white females die before giving birth. Although saving an animal from near extinction is difficult, it is not an impossible task. Experts have revived white rhinoceroses before. According to the World Wildlife Fund, people once thought the southern white rhinoceros were extinct until a small group was found in eastern South Africa in 1895. From that band of fewer than 100 animals, conservationists helped grow their numbers to more than 20,000. Northern white rhinoceros have been trending downward for decades, thanks to the interaction of poachers who seek their horns and the horns of the other rhino species. The future of this particular northern white rhinoceros species is very bleak, according to the World Wildlife Fund. If scientists are able to manage the science to bring back the northern white rhino from the edge of a cliff, perhaps they could apply their methods to other rhino types. There are only 5 rhino species left on the earth, and all of them are in danger. The Javan, Sumatra rhinos are in the direst straits, with only a few dozen Javan rhinos left standing and only about 200 Sumatran rhinos left still alive. Overall, the white rhino species is the most well off. It is under threat, but it is the sole rhino species that is not teetering on the edge of extinction as a whole. That is because of the size of the population of the southern white rhino. Still, it is on unstable ground, and even the southern white rhinoceros is in peril due to human activities. Just last year, poachers broke into a French zoo and killed a white rhino before sawing off one of its horns. The 4-year-old rhino named Vince was shot in the head during the first poaching incident inside a zoo. Think of that. They killed the animal inside the zoo in a major developed country in a modern, socially cultivated and developed city. What is man's impact on the world in which he lives? This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. I'm going to ask my beautiful engineer to give me a piece of upbeat music as we begin to change pace and get to other subject matters on tonight's program. We'll be right back.
sidewalk healing. Get up, get up, get up, get up. Let's make love tonight. Wake up, wake up, wake up, wake up. Cause you do it right.
Welcome back. Welcome back. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Recently, the world of science, and I would be remiss if I did not mention it, the scientific world lost one of its presumed great thinkers, Dr. Stephen Hawking. He was to be considered a noted theoretical physicist and astrophysicist. For about 5, maybe 6 years, I had been hoping to debate Mr. Hawking on some of his theories and his position on subject matter that I thought eminently relevant to not only my community, but the world community at large. And I wanted to have an opportunity to speak with him publicly about that. Unfortunately, with the passing of Mr. Hawking, that will not be. However, a few weeks, or rather maybe even a few months before his departure from this life, he had published a paper that several media outlets touted as a way to finally prove or disprove the existence of parallel worlds. But that claim may be a bit of cosmic inflation, according to several physicists who were not involved in Mr. Hawking's research. To quote Sabine Hassenfelder, he says, "The paper makes no statements about observational tests. It's not entirely uninteresting, but it's one of literally several thousand ideas for what might possibly have happened in the early universe, which may include parallel worlds." Sabine Hassenfelder is a physicist at the Frankfurt Institute for Advanced Studies in Germany, who is an avid blogger at backreactions.blogspot.com. Now, I'm offering that to those who are heavily involved in physics that listen to the program to always have a good balance, a good counterbalance to your positions, to see what your detractors and your supporters think, that maybe, may give you a fuller understanding of your position. In the paper, the study by Hawking and his associate, Thomas Herzog, who is also a physicist at the Catholic University of Leuven in Belgium, they say first appeared in the preprint journal Eryxis in July 2017 and was modified just a week before by Hawking before he passed away. The study is an attempt to isolate the types of universes predicted by one of Hawking's unproven theories, the no boundary model, to explain the Big Bang. And again, I'm going to make sure I pound this in. As great a physicist as Mr. Hawking may have been, I don't know. I didn't know the man personally. I did follow some of his work. His position and his assertions were simply theoretical. He did not prove anything. To give an extremely painful example of this is a person who cries rape. And all the world assumes you're guilty and you did it. But all they did is say you did it, but they did not prove you did it, nor did they offer any evidence that you did do it. They only offered their opinion. For some decades and years and months and centuries later, to find out that you weren't guilty of it at all. And the science did prove it out. But Mr. Hawking's paper, however, it was stated by Frank Wilczek, a Nobel laureate and theoretical physicist at MIT. He says it relies on several speculative and unproven theories and uses them in bold ways to make vague conclusions. The roots of the paper go back to one of Hawking's best known yet unproven theories, the no boundary proposal to explain the Big Bang. According to Einstein's theory of general relativity, before the Big Bang, there must have been a singularity or an infinitely dense, extremely hot speck of matter for which the laws of physics break down. In this conception, which was formulated with University of California, Santa Barbara physicist James Hartle, this singularity was one in both space and time, meaning that before the Big Bang, time as we know it now didn't exist. Try to visualize the universe in time then, and it is as if it had no boundaries, like a globe that can be traversed over and over and over without ever reaching an edge. As scientists analyzed the idea, they realized that Hawking's no boundary theory predicts that this baby universe, as it inflated super fast, will pop off other universes, and ultimately an entire multiverse. In fact, Hawking's theory, again, there's that word, theory, ultimately posited that our humble universe is just one of infinitely many parallel universes that exist in this infinite fractal-like multiverse. This multiverse would then lead to a paradox. Now, what does this word paradox mean? Because you'll hear it a lot, particularly from scientists, but without providing a detailed explanation, of what a paradox means. It is difficult and will become increasingly more difficult for the layman to understand what the heck someone is talking about. So I'm going to give you a definition of paradox. As a noun, a paradox is a seemingly absurd or self-contradictory statement or proposition that, when investigated or explained, may prove to be well-founded or true. Equally, a synonym for the word paradox would be contradiction, inconsistency, incongruity. A paradox also means a statement or proposition that, despite sound or accordingly apparently sound reasoning from an acceptable premise, leads to a conclusion that seems senseless, logically unacceptable, or self-contradictory. That is a paradox. Scientifically, the definition does not change. So, the multiverse, according to this fractal-like conditions offered by Mr. Hawking, would then lead to a paradox. Because there would be an infinite number of universes, no one would be able to make any testable predictions about the particular universe we happen to live in. Hertog told Live Science, and I would be remiss if I did not give credit to Tia Goss, who's an associate editor at Live Science, for categorizing this information. Let's continue. Herzog told Live Science in an email that there was no way to test these predictions from Mr. Hawking. Anything with an infinite number of possibilities becomes possible, and no particulars about a universe could be determined, according to Mr. Herzog. Mr. Herzog also said Hawking was not satisfied with this state of affairs. He says, let's try to tame the multiverse. This is Mr. Hawking's words. Let's try to tame the multiverse. So he and his associates set out to develop a method to transform the idea of a multiverse into a coherent, testable scientific framework. They failed. To cut down the infinite number of parallel worlds, the researchers had to find a bridge between quantum physics that dominated the teensy, tiny singularity of the fetal universe and the classical laws that govern the big universe we all live in. In the new study, Hawking and Hertog used a method known as holography to unite the two sets of ideas. By doing so, they were able to cut this vast forest of multiverses into a countable number. Once they were working with a finite number of universes, they could make predictions about what these universes would look like, according to Mr. Hertog. For instance, and I quote, they find that universes which are smooth and like our own, basically, are probable, according to the words of Hassenfelder to Live Science magazine. And I'm going to stop this discussion right there because it goes on into a lot of jibber-jabber. The idea is the world may mourn the loss of the theoretical mind of Mr. Stephen Hawking because he came up with ideas. However, Mr. Hawking, and may God bless him in whatever form or fashion that he decides, I disagreed with categorically on most of his assertions, and quite frankly, he never proved anything. He just threw out an idea. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. So, let's get to something that we can talk about. New stem cell treatments give blind patients the ability to read, according to CBS News in Denver. On March 20th of this year, it was said on CBS Denver, Channel 4, CBS Local, a revolutionary new stem cell treatment is giving doctors hope of developing a cure for blindness within the next 5 years. The experimental therapy was reportedly given to two patients who were both losing their sight, the ability to read again. Doctors in London say they have successfully treated two people who were suffering from age-related muscular degeneration, AMD, a condition that can destroy a person's vision center in multiple ways. Quoting Dr. Douglas Walters, in the months before the operation, my sight was really poor and I couldn't see anything out of my right eye. He says, I can now read the newspaper. Congratulations to you. Waters and a woman in her early 60s were both part of the experimental treatment created by the London Project to cure blindness. According to their report, published in Nature Biotechnology, the procedure involved implanting a patch of stem cells over the damaged areas of each patient's eyes. The stem cells work to repair the leakage of blood vessels around the retina, which is known as the wet version of AMD. The dry version of the sight-destroying condition is a slower deterioration of the retina itself, which Professor Pete Coffey says may be treated by the same procedure but has not been tested yet. Both patients received the stem cell patch, or I should say both patients receiving the stem cell patch had wet AMD. University College of London added, "We hope this will lead to an affordable, off-the-shelf therapy that could be made available to patients within the next 5 years." Professor Coffey added that his patients are having better results than expected. Both patients are able to see about twice as much as the London researchers predicted. The first patient has got 6 lines improvement, which is astounding on the standard eye chart test. And the second have 5 lines improvement and seems to be getting better as the months go by. This was reported in the Guardian in London, England. Can you imagine a cure for degenerative blindness in the elderly? Can you imagine? Equally, it was reported in AJC.com, Jason Lemon writing, he said the following, and right now things are moving slower than I would like, so let's keep on moving here, here we go. He says in his writing, "Scientists in the United Kingdom believe a cure for the most common cause of blindness could be ready in less than 5 years." In reporting on the revolutionary new stem cell therapy, he said the two patients have regained enough of their eyesight to be able to read. The first patient, in getting 6 lines of improvement, which is outstanding, and the second patient receiving the 5 lines of improvement, appear that their vision is getting better and better and better to exceed the standard of 20/20 vision. Previously, the woman who received the therapy could read about 1 word a minute with magnification. She's now reading 80 words a minute. The man is reading 50 words a minute. Dr. Coffey said the results were even better than what he and his colleague, Lyndon DeCruz, a retinal surgeon at Mooresfield Eye Hospital, initially had hoped for. Quoting Dr. Coffey, he said, "We said we'd get 3 out of the proposed 10 patients with vision recovery of 3 lines. They probably wouldn't get reading vision back. In the months before the operation, Douglas Water says his eyesight was really poor and he couldn't see anything completely out of the right eye. This man was 86 years of age. He says it is brilliant what the team has done to restore his eyesight. According to the Foundation Fighting Blindness, AMD is the most common cause of blindness In developed countries, across the United States, more than 10 million people suffer from the disease individually, with AMD experiencing loss of vision due to the death of a thin layer of light-sensing retinal cells at the back of the eye, located in the region called the macula. The individuals involved in this trial had a severe form of the disease referred to as wet AMD. This can cause sight loss to occur rapidly, often within a matter of days or weeks. What's exciting about this study is that the patients recorded an increase in vision. Patients with very poor vision are chosen for phase one trials because of their untested nature. Dr. Carmel Toombs, an associate professor at Leeds Institute of Molecular Medicine, who was not involved in the research, told this to The Independent. To see an improvement is a good sign that this therapy may help patients in the future, although further studies are needed before real conclusions can be drawn. Will this cure last? Dr. Cruz says, "We've restored vision where there was none. As you get older, parts of you stop working, and for the first time, we've been able to take a cell and make it into a specific part of the eye that's failing and put it back in the eye and get vision back." The researchers hope their trials will lead to an affordable off-the-shelf, which means you can go to any pharmacy and buy what you need, an off-the-shelf therapy within as little as 5 years or less. As for the patients involved with the trial, they're just grateful to see again. "I can now read the newspaper and help my wife out with the gardening," according to Mr. Waters. All too often, dear listeners, as we said last week, many parents do not understand science, but they want their children to. They don't understand the language. They don't see any real evidence of science's impact on them in their everyday lives. So they look past it. They overlook it. They have no regard for it. This is where science comes into play. This is where science impacts your everyday life. Without science, there is no technology, because the technology is used by the scientists to produce the results that are necessary. Where technology provides a platform for science to work, there is no technology without the scientists to use it. Gene therapy, stem cell therapy, all of these things, when applied in the proper manner, give benefit to our everyday lives. Science used improperly will certainly run us into hell. The over-harvesting of land by man leads to the eradication of life, the extinction of the animal world. It leads to changing patterns in the weather. It leads to deforestation, which then impacts the air we breathe. It leads to famine. It leads to the poisoning of the water that we need to drink, because we tend to go too far. those with money can buy what they need, and those without money take whatever you can find and what you can get. Life is a cycle of people who provide things for people that provide things for people that provide things for people in order for people to survive. The business owner cannot provide a service or a product unless there's someone to assist him in doing the work to make the product that provides the service to the one who can afford to buy it. The economic cycle of life is the economic cycle of purchaser, product, sales, purchaser. Simply because you have the means to buy, don't mean the means to produce will always be there if you don't take care of each other. Lest you run the world to extinction and you die as well. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad Hill, on the Black Hole Radio Network. A question. Do we ever learn our lessons? It's been recently reported on CNN. Male birth control pill is one step closer to reality. Have we learned our lessons? Do we look at the past? Do we look at the now and say, based on the evidence of what we've done, that we know better what to do tomorrow? Birth control pills. A woman's choice. Women have many choices when it comes to avoiding pregnancy. But men have had, traditionally, only two. According to the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, 99% of sexually active women used at least one contraceptive method at some point between 2006 and 2010. Now, for decades, birth control pills have exclusively been used by women. But a male birth control pill that is both safe and effective, supposedly, my words, is on the horizon, according to a new study. The results of the study were presented Sunday at the annual Endocrine Society meeting in Chicago. The researchers found that the proposed hormone pill called dimethindrolone, undecanoate, or DMAU, effectively reduced testosterone and other hormone levels responsible for sperm production without any serious side effects, according to Dr. Stephanie Page, an endocrinologist at the University of Washington School of Medicine and a lead author of the study. She says, "Our goal and everyone's goal in this field is to develop a method for men that has minimal side effects. And the holy grail would be to develop something that also has a health benefit for men." There are a number of birth control options for women, including hormone-based pills, injections, and intrauterine devices. However, the menu of options is much smaller for men. Quoting Dr. Page again, the only option currently available for men are vasectomy, condoms, and coitus interruptus. She also went on to say 40% of pregnancies worldwide are unplanned, so there's clearly an unmet need for novel contraceptives, and men have very few options. A vasectomy is a surgical procedure that prevents the transmission of sperm by cutting the vas deferens, a structure that supports sperm from the testes to the urethra. Coitus interruptus refers to the withdrawal or pullout method, which is significantly less effective than most other methods of contraception, according to the U.S. Center for Disease Control and Prevention. The new study relied on 83 men between the ages of 18 and 50 who were randomly assigned to either a control group or one of three treatment programs. Each treatment group received a dosage of the drug, 100, 200, or 400 milligrams. The researchers found out that after taking the drug for 28 days, testosterone in the blood dropped to castrate level for all three doses. Castrate levels. Interesting term. Castrate levels refers to the target range of testosterone in the blood after chemical or surgical castration and is usually defined as 50 nanograms per deciliter. The group given 400 milligrams also saw a significant reduction in LH and FSH, two hormones that help regulate testosterone and sperm production by the testes. According to Dr. Seth Cohen, a professor of urology at New York's Langone Health, he says, normal testosterone in a man is anywhere from 350 to 1,100 nanograms per deciliter. Admittedly so, Dr. Cohen was not involved in the study. He goes on to say, and these guys down to 13 nanograms, and they got these guys down to 13 nanograms per deciliter. A testosterone level this low would typically be found only in prepubescent boys and girls, not adult men, according to the Mayo Clinic. Prepubescent. Well, that never seemed to be the case in impoverished communities where it was not unusual for 9 and 10 year olds to father children and to become pregnant. Interesting. But due to the study, small sample size, more research is needed to evaluate the potential side effects of the drug in general population, according to Dr. Cohen. She says 9 participants had decreased libido, which is not small. When you put that on a large multi-million person basis, 9 out of the 83 had a decreased libido. Okay, what does that mean? No sex drive, no desire. When you put 9 out of 83 and you multiply that up into the millions, you have a huge portion of men running around with very low libido. You don't need the pill if you have no sex drive. However, finding a male birth control pill has been a medical goal since at least the 1950s, when scientists first began developing hormonal birth control options. Though the pill eventually gained popularity among women, hormonal birth control options for men never really took off, according to Dr. Page. She said people have been working on male hormonal contraception for 40 to 50 years. There are ways of delivering male contraceptives with long-acting implants and injections. But men are interested in having an oral pill available. And the work we presented here is a step forward. The substance used in the study, the DMAU, has properties similar to both androgens, such as testosterone, and progestins, such as progesterone. Consequently, it can trick the body into thinking that the testosterone levels are adequate, inhibiting the hormonal pathways that ultimately lead to the production of sperm, according to Dr. Cohen. The drug's androgen-like properties are also supposed to prevent side effects typically associated with low testosterone levels, according to Dr. Page. She said, if you simply look at the men's testosterone, or if you simply took the men's testosterone down to these low levels, they would absolutely have side effects. They would have hot flashes, just like women do, and when they go through menopause. And they would have marked changes in sexual desire and function. She also said, or rather I should say Dr. Page also said, the very important point here is that despite having those low levels of testosterone, the steroid that is given in this prototype male pill provides the androgen activity in the men in all other parts of their body. So there is a success and there are limitations. This is not the first time a hormonal contraceptive has been tested in men. In 2016, a study looked at the effectiveness of a hormonal injection given every 8 weeks. Although the drug was effective in reducing pregnancies, it was associated with a number of adverse side effects, which included depression, severe acne, and an altered libido. altered libido. What does that mean? Altered libido. That means the men were becoming feminized. Due to these side effects, 20 out of the 320 participants of that study dropped out. But the newest drug, the DMAU, showed a marked reduction in many of these unwanted side effects. It also did not appear to damage the liver, a known consequence of testosterone use, according to Dr. Page. Dr. Page said, we looked at markers of liver inflammation very closely and did not see anything concerning. So that's very important. But the study period of only 28 days makes it difficult to know whether liver damage could have occurred with long-term usage of the drug. This is validated by Dr. Cohen. The study also did not measure sperm count, one of the study's main limitations. According to Dr. Page, the research team succeeded in achieving its primary objective, identifying an effective and potentially safe dose of DMAU. The original study was really designed to find a dose to move forward with. And we were able to accomplish that and demonstrate that there were no acute safety concerns. Now, me personally, friends, I look at the language used here. There were no acute safety concerns. Not that there were no safety concerns. And we're not going to concern ourselves with time. I know we're going to go past the 8 o'clock hour. We're going to go until I'm finished with this subject. It also opened the door for future research that is already in the works, according to Dr. Page. Dr. Page also said the important next step is to show that this does, in fact, suppress the production of sperm. And that requires at least a 3-month study, which she said they're going to be undertaking next month. After that, we'll need longer-term studies to look in detail about fine-tuning any potential side effects, and ultimately doing a study in couples with couples that actually demonstrate that it works in real-world usage. Here's the issue. Did we learn anything? Are oral female contraceptives really as safe as we're likely told? As we've been told, I say not. A chemical has been introduced into women that has produced some very damaging side effects. A lot of times you hear, well, you give a girl a child birth control pills, it'll promote her to be promiscuous. That's a possibility, but not necessarily so. Culture and upbringing determines the degree of promiscuity. But the chemical does alter things about their personality. It does affect the ways in which her body performs. There has been a real connection made between the women who have gone into their late 40s, or let's just say their late 30s, going toward their 40s and toward their 50s, who have had an increased risk of partial hysterectomies or total hysterectomies. There is an increased risk in the post-traumatic effect of the chemical used in birth control pills in psychological disorders. Depression. You consider these chemicals that are introduced into the body and the effect of other medications that are used, and you don't know what kind of person you're going to come up with. So, to that end, what are the severe side effects of birth control pills? According to Parent.com, which says whether you're considering birth control shots, birth control pills, or other birth control methods, contraceptives don't just prevent pregnancy. Hormones in birth control can also be responsible for clearing up acne or weight gain. Yes, a lot of young girls are given birth control pills because they got acne. Part of the natural process of growing up and the body's internal system going through the developmental process from child to adult. You pop in a birth control pill and your baby maker isn't the only thing that's getting the treatment. That's because each of those little pills contain hormones and changes the hormones in your body. According to Dr. Tony Stern, MD and chair of obstetrics and gynecology at Coney Island Hospital in New York, while some are good, many more, some less than are less than ideal, and others are downright dangerous. The plausible, practical, and possible side effects are just that. Everybody is different, and everybody responds to birth control pill formulation in a different way. Oral contraceptives have been around for over 50 years. They've undergone what is said to be improvements, including decreasing the amounts of hormones put into pills and using different forms of progesterone. According to Dr. Wendy Wilcox, she's the vice chairperson of North Bronx Healthcare Network and the Department of Obstetrics and Gynecology, also in New York. Supposedly, all that makes them safer. The drug concentration, type, and hormonal blends also impact your body's reaction. I'm saying the good does not outweigh the harm. The hormonal swings that your body goes through after you come off birth control pills and later on in your life are not worth it. The severity of premenstrual syndrome and the increased possibility of premenstrual syndrome does not outweigh the side effects. Premenstrual dysphonic disorder. All of these things are side effects of taking oral contraceptives. Did we learn the lesson? We've experimented on our women. Now you're going to do it to yourself? You're better off just using a condom or being responsible for what you produce. This is Not So Mad Science here on the Black Hole Radio Network. We have gone past our time. And as always, prayerfully, I hope we have shared something that has inspired you to do some homework yourself. And don't just let anybody tell you anything. Check it out yourself. Be inspired. Be invigorated. Be enthusiastic to be your greatest cheerleader in your life. To my engineer, I'm so glad you're back. I love you, dear. Welcome back to the Not So Mad Science family, and welcome back to the control board. To that end, hoping that I've done you no harm, and I've done you no ill will. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, here on the Black Hole Radio Network. Staying prayerfully that next week we will have a live show with on-air guests, The Drum, with Kenny Muhammad, the Human Orchestra, Kevin Bujo-Jones, professor of music, and David Trustee of the Native Nations of Michigan, as we discuss the drum, the science, the impact, the communication, and the healing. This is Not So Mad Science with your host, Brother Harold Muhammad, signing off. We'll see you next week. Keep the faith, baby. Keep the faith.